Bienvenidos and welcome, everyone. I am Lauren Hutton, and you already knew that. Welcome to Lauren's podcast. Oh, man, I love this intro music so much. Oh, it's way too loud. I'm definitely going to go deaf in the next 10 years doing this podcast. Yeah, that's generous, thinking I'm still going to be doing this in 10 years. How many podcasts have I given up on over the past 3 years? Well, I'll give you the short answer. It's three. I'm not a consistent person. I give up on things real easily, like podcasts or stand-up comedy or quarantining. That's a lie. I'm not quarantined. I've already told everyone on this that I'm an essential employee and I'm still going to work and I'm super grateful for it, or whatever I said before. See, this is a weird element. We're doing something new. I don't normally record this in front of people. Normally, it's just a couple of cats. But my girlfriend's in the room. Everyone say hi to her. She's shaking her head at me. I asked her several times if she wanted to be on this episode, and she was like, I'm not microphone ready. And I'm like, I don't know what that even means. I mean, I get it. You just hopped out of the shower and you haven't like primped yourself for the public, but they can't see you. There's absolutely no visual element to being on a microphone. And that statement made her laugh, and I don't know why. You would think that after doing some amount of comedy that I have, you know, developed some sort of understanding as to why things are funny, but you'd be wrong. I'm wrong about most things. Come join the club. Be wrong with me. If you've learned anything from this podcast, it's that I don't know what I'm talking about, and that's why I take articles from Facebook and I read them at you. Some people might read things to another person, but those people, those are the ones that are going to heaven. You know what I mean? The people that are in nursing homes reading to old folks. I should probably start doing that. That might actually, I don't know. It'd probably be rewarding, right? Go in and you could read nursery rhymes to the elderly. The elderly? Do they like being called that? I don't know. I got in trouble for calling homeless people the homeless this week, and I still don't understand why that's wrong. Apparently, you're supposed to call them Bob that doesn't have a place. I don't know. Everything's upside down. I'm feeling weird. Everything's changing at work because of the whole social distancing thing. Our company keeps getting yelled at repeatedly. 6 feet, 6 feet, 2 meters. They're real hopped up about it. Our owner has made like a blanket statement that we're going to have one person or less in the office. And I don't know what that means because I work in the office. Am I one person or am I less? Am I less than one person? Laura, tell me. Shouldn't have used her name. That was a mistake. It doesn't matter. She's not going to listen to this. But Alex might. Shout out to Alex. I work with him in the office. How's everyone doing with their isolation? Has everyone lost their minds yet? I'm seeing a lot of posts on the social media. People that are doing real crazy things with their hair. Shout out to Tremarco and that mustache. That sounds like a really cool band from the 70s. Tremarco and the mustache? It's either a band or a porn. I can't tell. The mustache definitely looks like it belongs in a porn. That's for sure. If you don't know who I'm talking about, just go to Facebook. Type in Johnny Tremarco. You'll learn some things. He's a bit of a tinfoil hat kind of a person. Like, he's the guy that texted me earlier this week, I'm learning how to make booby traps. And I didn't know how to respond to that. How do you respond to a guy that actively and honestly tells you he's learning how to make booby traps? I don't know what that means. The conversation started with, hey, I'm going to start a garden, which is a perfectly plausible thing to say to another human being, especially in a time of crisis. Like, hey, I'm going to grow my own food, I'm going to cook that food, and I'm going to survive no matter what. How does that ideology, how does that idea transfer into booby traps? Are you going to booby trap your garden? Are you going to have, like, tiger pits in your garden? You guys know what a tiger pit is? It's a hole in the ground with spikes at the bottom to kill your enemies that are coming to take your squash. No one would grow squash, but Tremarco would. He would also be the only person that I know that would learn how to make tiger traps even though he owns a condo. He doesn't even have a yard to put a tiger trap in. And yet there he is talking about booby traps. Love you, John. Hope you're doing well. Isolation's hard. It's a weird thing. because like we're social creatures. One of the things that we actually use to punish people in our prison systems is isolation. And it messes with your brain. You spend too much time without interacting with another human being, and you can just absolutely go bonkers banana crazy. And yet, there are monks living in monasteries that take vows of silence, and they don't interact with another human being for years at a time, and they seem perfectly fine. You know why? Because they have a garden, and they're not making tiger pits. That's why. At least that's my understanding of how that works. We've already covered this. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I asked Leah to be on this episode because I don't have anything to say. My life is one day that just bleeds into the next. It's the same thing every single day. We go to work, we come home, we look at each other and we say, hey, what do you want to watch on TV? It's the same thing every single day. And you know what? I am tired of the same four things that we keep eating for dinner. It's tacos, hamburgers, pizza, or Chinese food. That's it. That's our whole dinner life right there. Is that accurate, honey? She's not microphone ready. She's laying on the bed next to me playing our Nintendo Switch, because that's the other thing that we do with our time. We watch a lot of TV, we play a lot of video games, and I don't know why I'm complaining about that, because at least we still have the opportunity to go to work and socialize with people, at least on some modicum of level. Modicum? I'm not using that word correctly. We're both in management positions, so even though that like we don't... I mean, we get to interact with people at work, but it's on an annoying level because we expect too much out of other human beings. You know, just show up and do your job, wear a mask while you're doing it. That's pretty much it. And our whole lives, every time that we say anything about work, it's just like, these dumb fuckers! Sorry, Mom. Hey, there's the first one of the episode. We almost made it a full 6 minutes before I had to apologize to my mother. It never takes long. Y'all should know that by now. Shout out to my mother, just because. Told her I wasn't going to Easter because I didn't want to kill Grandma, and she was like, Grandma's the reason that we're doing Easter. I'm like, okay, we definitely have different ideologies about what a pandemic means. My mom and my grandmother both were like, they weren't nurses, but they were like medical aides of some kind. My mom does in-home health right now. My grandmother worked in a nursing home as like an STNA or whatever the equivalent of that was 30 years ago. I don't know if the terminology has changed, but you know, they're in the medical field. They should know better, right? I don't know. I shouldn't harp on my mother because then I'll just start sounding like one of those folks. You know what I mean? Those people that just get trapped into like one idea and they don't know how to let it go. Like Marc Maron and his cats. I have cats. You don't hear me talking about them every single episode. Well, I mention them, but I'm definitely not, you know, going on and on and on about their behavior. But I'm going to do it now because I don't have anything else to talk about. We have two cats. One of them name. Oh, my God. Someone punch me in the freaking throat. One of their names is Leo. He's got big cat energy. Seriously. He thinks he's in a cage and being tormented by a gay redneck, if you know what I mean. Our other cat has small dog energy. He barks at pizza people. He makes a lot of noise in the middle of the night. That's not a meow. I don't know what the noise is that he's making. It sounds like a cat in heat, but he's never been in heat. He's only been into what we're eating. He eats whatever he wants. He had some crab legs today, you know, because he's a prissy kitty. Prissy kitty eating some crab legs. We didn't buy crab legs for our cats. I don't want to put that out there. That is not how we operate our lives. But there has been a container of wet cat food sitting on our counter for over a week, and I don't know why it was purchased. Are we suddenly going to be those kinds of folks? Are we going to be giving our cats wet food? Also, why has it been sitting there? Is that for Christmas? Is that what we're doing? I don't understand. I'm just trying to make my girlfriend giggle because she happens to be in the room while we're recording right now. And it's working. I hope you find it funny, too. Oh. In case you haven't noticed, the only idea that I keep coming back to is isolation because we're all, you know, stuck in our houses, not doing anything. My uncle has a mustache. Let's tie that back in. He's not booby trapping yet, but he did give himself a mustache. I saw the picture on Facebook, and he said his reasoning was that his hair is never going to be any less gray, so why not? Shout out to Ron. He looked like a cop. It was super cool. Yeah, mustaches in isolation. Lots of goofy stuff. I saw a Dayton comic dyed his beard. Everyone's doing weird things. You get stuck by yourself and you start going loopy. And I don't know. How do you deal with isolation? I typically stare at a television. That's also how I deal with not being isolated. So it's probably not a healthy alternative. It's not an alternative. It's the same behavior. I don't change. That's the point I'm trying to make. What do you do? Do you doodle? Do you get down and doodle? You start making your own cartoons about a duck that just says what the hell all the time? That's a reference to Community, the show I've been watching. That's all I've got. All right, thanks for tuning in. I'll see you guys next week. 10 minutes in and we're already sucking on fumes. I was on vacation with my family. I was like 9 years old, and this is the only time that I've ever seen my stepdad get super nervous. He's normally like a very even kill guy, you know, and this is the full-time Santa Claus I'm talking about, okay? He is just a bundle of joy now, but when I was a kid, he just never seemed to be rattled by things. But this one time we were on vacation and we almost ran out of gas, and that's where I learned the term sucking on fumes, because as we putted into the gas station, he turned to my mom and he said, "We were sucking on fumes." And I didn't understand what that meant until I was almost 20 years old. Why am I telling you this story? I honestly don't know. If you haven't figured out by now, there's not enough going on in my life to have anything interesting to say to you. I want to buy a bike. That's it. That's a thought that I had. I'm tired of getting fat, that's for sure. My underwear folds over, like, underneath my gut now. I have a gut. It's almost to the point that my gut has a fold in it. Because the warning sign is there. My underwear has a fold in it under my gut. The next thing that'll happen is my gut's going to have a fold in it. And then my tits will have folds in them. Do I have to apologize to my mom for saying tits? I don't think so. She has some. Yeah, I'm not doing well with the way that the world is operating right now. This whole, like, you know, quarantine, self-isolation. I did hear recently that, like, you know, it's starting to get better. It's starting to get better, you know. I don't know if we've completely flattened the curve, but, you know, new instances of cases, it's decreasing, which is super cool. We're still going through days where like 600 people will die overnight, but no more new cases. Well, I can't say no more new, but less new cases. It's good news. I work with a guy whose mother, or maybe it's his father, or maybe he's got two fathers. I don't know. I don't judge. But he's got a parent that works at the UC Health Facility in the research department. And for some reason, he just decided to tell me, hey, if you want any information about the virus that's, you know, hasn't been tainted by the media, ask me. And I'm like, you don't look like a guy that I would ask for directions, let alone like information about the virus. I mean, I'm sure that why would you lie about something like that? I don't think he's a sociopath. Anything's possible, though, I suppose. What's going on with you guys? Wow, this podcast sucks lately. I did record another episode of the podcast that I'm doing with Luke Fagenbusch, which we have decided to call How to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. It's a comedy podcast all about bombing. We're talking to local comics about, you know, their bombing experiences. And recently we recorded the episode with Mohammed Patel. And the first 20 minutes of that podcast are completely unusable because that podcast is being produced by the wonderful local cider brewery, Urban Artifact, and their whole radio artifact projects where they're producing, you know, music or podcast. I don't know what they're doing. I just know that they have a thing called Radio Artifact, and we're going to have a podcast that's going to be on it eventually. It's really hard to like figure out recordings because of the whole quarantine thing. Basically, we just ignore it for an hour and we sit across the table from each other and talk into microphones. Did I sanitize these microphones after we were done using them? Let's not talk about it. Moving on. Was this the microphone I had or was this the one that Mo had? That's a scary topic. It was a fun time, but yeah, those first 20 minutes were completely unusable because, like, I mean, forget editing for content. Forget, like, bleeping out curse words. You can't. Like, I thought for a while that maybe I would take that excerpt and, like, give it to y'all as, like, you know, a pre-promo for the Bomb podcast, but I don't know if I could play it on here because you wouldn't be able to hear anything that was going on because over top of all of it, you would just hear me constantly saying, "I'm sorry, Mom." It was the filthiest 20-minute conversation. It starts with Muhammad doing a butt chug of a Miller Lite. Did he really do it, or did we just do like the audio for a bit? I'm not sure. It may have actually happened. Who knows? All I can tell you is that Luke shoved the bottle all the way in there, and that's not how that's supposed to work. I also found out that Muhammad's favorite NBC television show is a wonderful syndicated program called Come Drunch Chores. Sorry, Mom. Don't know what that means, but we ended up talking about it for 20 minutes, and we couldn't actually start the real podcast because we couldn't stop laughing at the idea of Come Drunch Chores. Sorry, Mom. See what I mean? Yeah, isolation's making all my friends go crazy. It's making everything crazy. And that's why I decided to do a little talky about the isolationiation. I get dumber. That's the biggest thing that I've noticed in this like 5 or 6 weeks of you know, sheltering in place. I am getting dumber every single day. Luke came by the house to pick me up, and as soon as I started talking to him, I was like, oh, I don't know how to talk to people anymore. Me and my girlfriend say some of the dumbest shit around our house all the time. Sorry, Mom. And I don't know why, but I've gotten stuck in this horrific loop of just constantly making dad jokes. I don't write real jokes anymore. I just take what she said and I turn it on its head like a stupid stepfather. It is not a good pattern to be in. On a scale of 1 to 10, how annoying is that, honey? She's still not microphone ready. I'm so sorry. We might get her to say something. I think I have a better chance of getting my cat to make a noise than getting her to make a noise. Oh, I called it. That one was Leo. He makes that noise when you scratch his butt. It's like clockwork or butt work, however you want to look at it. Oh, I'm thinking about buying a coloring book. That's the spectrum that my brain is on. It goes from, I want a bicycle, to I want a color. I heard it helps with anxiety. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of anxiety anymore. I was talking to Leah yesterday about how I just like quit smoking weed and I don't miss it anymore, which was really ironic because we had an hour and a half conversation about that. And it's like, you know, I don't sleep any better than I used to sleep, but I don't get as angry when I'm lying awake in the middle of the night. It's a weird thing. Like, my insomnia doesn't bother me as much, even though it's still there. And we had this whole conversation on 420, and I didn't realize it until the next day. And I was like, oh, wow, I just, like, forgot that 420 was a thing. I don't know if I just wasn't on Facebook that day and didn't see anybody post anything about it. Coincidentally, that's also when Tremarco posted his crazy mustache. He's definitely not doing well with the isolation. Or maybe it was the 420 milligrams of THC that he ate that day. Who knows? No one will know because no one goes to his house anymore. they can't get to his house because it's covered in tiger pits. Okay, enough of the callbacks to all the dumb things I said 5 minutes ago. I don't know how long this is going to be because, like, as you can tell, I'm not really churning out gold right now. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to give up on the only returning segment on Lauren's podcast. That's right, you know it. It's time for Lauren's Learning Corner. Lauren's Learning Corner. You can just look it up yourself, but he's gonna read an article. article that I have found today is, you guessed it, it's based on isolation, and it is entitled The Risk of Social Isolation. This article is written by Amy Novotny. I think I'm saying that right. And it was written just under a year ago, and it was posted on the American Psychological Association website, APA.org. She writes, psychologists are studying how to combat loneliness and those most at risk, such as older adults. That's what I'm saying. We got to hop into those nursing homes and start reading them nursery rhymes. Not like full books or anything, just like short cutesy things. Just limericks, really. Just pop in, just blast out a couple limericks at your grandma, and then you can feel good about yourself for a year. The article begins, according to a 2018 national survey by Cigna. I don't know what Cigna is. Someone Google that and then at me on Twitter. Loneliness levels have reached an all-time high. Well, that was a year ago. I'm pretty sure that they're at an all-time high now. Nearly half of 20,000 U.S. adults reporting that they sometimes or always feel alone. 40% of survey participants also reported that they sometimes or always feel that their relationships are not meaningful and that they feel isolated. What a sad concept. Even when you're with another person, you feel completely just like devoid of people. That's the worst. I mean, being stuck in your house and not being able to interact with people is one thing, but being at a crowded bar around your quote-unquote friends when all of you are laughing together, but inside your own head, you're still just like, I'm so alone. It's not a good thing. I probably shouldn't do a cutesy voice when I say it. That kind of detracts from the reality of the subject. Anyways, such numbers are alarming because the health and mental health risks associated with loneliness. According to meta-analysis co-authored by Julianne Holt Lunsted, PhD, a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. Brigham Young? Wasn't that like some like church thing that tried to gather up young boys? I don't know. I'm probably reaching. The lack of social connection heightens health risks as much as smoking 15 cigarettes a day or having alcohol use disorder. That can't be right. I smoke 15 cigarettes a day. No, I don't. I also don't have an alcohol use disorder. I know exactly where the alcohol goes. It goes in Muhammad's butt. There we go. More callbacks. She also found that loneliness and social isolation are twice as harmful to physical and mental health as obesity. Let me take that sentence one more time and read it like I don't have a speech impediment or a learning disability. She also found that loneliness and social isolation are twice as harmful to physical and mental health as obesity. That's terrifying. Which means, like, if you want to be fat, it's better than being alone. So be the fat fun guy. Take a note out of Todd Masterson's book. He's big gay best friend. Look him up on Instagram. I know you don't know who these people are. There's a robust evidence that social isolation and loneliness significantly increases risk for premature mortality, and the magnitude of the risk exceeds that of leading health indicators. That is something that Holt Lunsted said. That's hard. Say that five times fast. Holt Lunsted said. Imagine trying to recant a story that you heard from Holt Lunsted. In an effort to stem such health risks, campaigns and coalitions to reduce social isolation and loneliness, an individual's perceived level of social isolation, have been launched in Australia, Denmark, and the United Kingdom. These national programs bring together research experts, nonprofit and government agencies, community groups, and skilled volunteers to raise awareness of loneliness and address social isolation through evidence-based interventions and advocacy. Where are those people now? Where are all the groups? Isn't the government supposed to be doing something about the fact that we're all stuck in our houses? Oh, yeah, that's right. The government said to stay in our houses. I should stop contradicting myself. Moving on. Is loneliness really increasing? Man, this is just so topical. Or is it a condition that humans have always experienced at various times in life? In other words, are we becoming lonelier or just more inclined to recognize and talk about the problem? Now, that's super fun because that's something that I think about all the time. There was the guy from like 700 WLW. He thought that 9/11 was caused by lesbians and witches. He recently also said that the coronavirus was caused by going down on women. That's right. Their dirty, dirty vaginas is where the coronavirus came from. COVID-19 in the pussy. Sorry, Mom. This guy's crazy. But he also stated that, like, you know, no one ever did that back in his day. Well, I guarantee people were going down back in his day. He just didn't have any cool friends. But how many concepts have been around and they've just not been acknowledged? I mean, did the whole like LGBTQ community just like fabricate itself out of nowhere? Or have they always been there and we've never been able to acknowledge and look at them before? I don't think anything is new. Everything has already been around and we're just getting around to being able to talk about it. Anyhoozle. These are tough questions to answer because historical data about loneliness is scant. You're darn tootin' it scant, because what? Think about back in the 50s. No guy would look at the other guy on the construction site and be like, yeah, sometimes, you know, we can be up here on these I-beams building this here building, man, but I feel alone. That was never a conversation that happened. I don't even think that, like, I don't think anybody would talk about loneliness back then. It wasn't cool. I mean, somebody came up and they were like, I'm lonely. And the first thing that people would do back in the day is run away from them, creating more of the problem. The most recent U.S. census data, for example, show that more than a quarter of the population lives alone, the highest rate ever recorded. Now, that's interesting. That's definitely new information. In addition, more than half of the population is unmarried, and marriage rates and the number of children per household have declined since the previous census. That's a win in my book. There's too many people, and we shouldn't be making as many of them. Where was I? Rates of volunteerism have also decreased. Well, that sucks. That's what I'm saying. We got to get into these nursing homes, spitting limericks at old folks. According to the research by the University of Maryland's Do Good Institute, and an increasing percentage of Americans report no religious affiliation. Are you telling me that people only volunteered because God told them to? Maybe. Now, this is suggesting declines in the kinds of religious and other institutional connections that can provide community. So, was God important, or was it just us being together? That's an interesting concept. I remember, like, whenever I was growing up, people would talk, the old people in the church that I grew up in would talk about, like, damages to the church, and every young person's comeback to that was, the church isn't a building, it's the people inside the building. That's what my mom sounded like back in the day. Sorry, Mom. Regardless of whether loneliness is increasing or remaining stable, we have lots of evidence that a significant portion of the population is affected by it, says Holt Lundsted. Being connected to others socially is widely considered a fundamental human need, crucial to both well-being and survival. You gotta have people. As experts in behavior change, psychologists are well-positioned to help the nation combat loneliness. Through their research and public policy work, many psychologists have been providing data and detailed recommendations for advancing social connection as a U.S. public health priority on both the societal and individual levels. Basically, people do better when they hang out. So I can't wait for this whole mess to be over. Let's have a barbecue. Have I ever looked you in the eye at Kroger? You're invited. Come on, let's be friends. With an increasing aging population, the effects of loneliness on public health are only anticipated to increase. That's what I'm saying. Get in the nursing homes. Spit those limericks. The challenge we face now is figuring out what can be done about it. Now, who is most likely to be lonely? Loneliness is an experience that has been around since the beginning of time. Ever since Adam and Eve first had their first scuffle over that apple, they each went to different parts of the sandbox and pouted. And then they had some kids, and then they had some kids to hang out with, and those kids had kids, which is a creepy concept because there weren't that many people around. I mean, as soon as there was more than two people on the world, one of them murdered another one. That doesn't have anything to do with what I'm talking about. Just go read your Bible. According to Amy Ruchach, PhD, an instructor at York University in Canada, a clinical psychologist, she says it's something every single one of us deals with from time to time. What a professional statement. She had to have a PhD to be quoted saying that. It's something all of us deal with from time to time. I'm sorry, that's a dude. Amy is a dude. I apologize. He explains that loneliness can occur during life transitions, such as death of a loved one, a divorce, or a move to a new place. This kind of loneliness is referred to by researchers as reactive loneliness. Big life changes, you don't know how to cope with it, you get less social, especially if you move to a new place, you got to figure out how to make friends. It's hard to make friends as an adult, especially if you don't have anyone to introduce you to people that you might actually like. You could waste so much time on garbage people and then find out that they're garbage people and just be like, well, do I want to go back to being alone or do I keep hanging out with these assholes? Sorry, Mom. Problems can arise, however, when an experience of loneliness becomes chronic. If reactive loneliness is painful, chronic loneliness is torturous. He says, chronic loneliness is most likely to set in when individuals either don't have the emotional, mental, or financial resources to get out and satisfy their social needs, or they lack a social circle that can provide these benefits. A senior research scientist at the research organization NORC, N-O-R-C, at the University of Chicago, Lewis Hawkley, says that when things can become very problematic and when many of the major negative health consequences of loneliness can set in, that's when that happens. Last year, a Pew Research Center survey of more than 6,000 U.S. adults linked frequent loneliness to dissatisfaction with one's family, social, and community life. About 28% of those dissatisfied with their family life feel lonely all or most of the time. Family is wickedly important. Those people that made you a people, they're important. Why do you think I keep apologizing to my mother? It makes me feel connected with her, even though I don't call her enough. Now, compare that with just 7% of those satisfied with their family life. Satisfaction with one's social life follows a similar pattern. 26% of those dissatisfied with their social lives are frequently lonely, compared with just 5% of those who are satisfied with their social lives. 1 in 5 Americans who say they are not satisfied with the quality of life in their local communities feel frequent loneliness. Roughly triple the 7% of Americans who are satisfied with the quality of their life in their communities. If you're happy with where you're at and who's around you, you're just going to be happier. And of course, loneliness can occur when people are surrounded by others, on the subway, in a classroom, or even with their children and families. According to Rachach, who adds that loneliness is not synonymous with chosen isolation or solitude. Rather, loneliness is defined by people's levels of satisfaction with their connectedness and their perceived social isolation. It has absolutely nothing to do with like who you're around or who you're spending time with. If you're not satisfied with that, you're still going to be lonely. So to answer the earlier question that I posed, do you go back to actually being alone or do you keep hanging out with those assholes? It's better to leave those assholes behind. You may learn something about yourself. You may learn to enjoy your own company more, but you're never going to figure that out if you're hanging out with people that you hate. Now, the effects of loneliness and isolation. As demonstrated by a review of the effects of perceived social isolation across the lifespan, co-authored by Hawkley, loneliness can wreak havoc on an individual's physical, mental, and cognitive health. Hockley points to evidence linking perceived social isolation with adverse health consequences, including depression, poor sleep quality, impaired executive function, accelerated cognitive decline. It can make you dumber? That's scary. Poor cardiovascular function and impaired immunity at every stage of life. In addition, a 2019 study led by Cassandra A., PhD, MPH, a public health researcher with the American Cancer Society, analyzed data from more than 580,000 adults. That's roughly 500,000 for those of you that understand fractions. They found that social isolation increases the risk of premature death from every cause for every race. According to among black participants, social isolation doubled the risk of early death, while it increased the risk among white participants by 60 to 84%. That's weird. I don't know why they brought race into it, but apparently the numbers don't lie. Our research really shows that the magnitude of risk presented by social isolation is very similar to the magnitude of that of obesity, smoking, lack of access to care, and physical inactivity. In the study, investigators weighted social standard measures of social isolation, including marital status, frequency of religious service attendance, club meetings/group activities, and number of close friends or relatives. They found that overall, race seemed to be a stronger indicator of social isolation than sex. White men and women were more likely to be in the least isolated category than black men or women. I wonder why that is. The American Cancer Society study is the largest to date on all races and genders, but previous research has provided glimpses into the harmful effects of social isolation and loneliness. A 2016 study led by Newcastle University epidemiologist Nicole Valtorta. I don't know why I'm announcing her like she's entering the ring. For example, linked loneliness to a 30% increase in the risk of stroke or developing a coronary heart disease. Oh my God, loneliness can literally break your heart. Valtorta notes that the lonely individual's higher risk of ill health likely stems from several combined factors, behavioral, biological, and psychological. She's quoted as saying, "Lacking encouragement from family or friends, those who are lonely may slide into unhealthy habits. In addition, loneliness has been found to raise levels of stress, impede sleep, and in turn harm the body. Loneliness also augment depression and anxiety." So yeah, it just sucks all around. It'll make you binge eat and do all kinds of other terrible things. Last year, researchers at the Florida State University College of Medicine also found that loneliness is associated with a 40% increase in a person's risk for dementia. You literally will lose your mind. Led by Angelina Sutton, PhD, the study examined data on more than 12,000 U.S. adults ages 50 years and older. Participants rated their levels of loneliness and social isolation and completed a cognitive battery every 2 years for up to 10 years. They watched these folks for a long time, and they were elderly, so I'm sure some of the people just up and died. And they were like, well, they must have been lonely. Premature mortality. Now, among older adults in particular, loneliness is more likely to set in when an individual is dealing with functional limitations and has low family support. Better self-rated health, more social interaction, and less family strain reduce older adults' feelings of loneliness, according to the study. Examining data from more than 2,200 older adults, even among those who started out lonely, those who were in better health and socialized with others more often had a better odds of subsequently recovering from their loneliness. So yeah, go outside. Well, don't go outside yet. Wait until everything's over. But once this is over, don't stay in the habits that you've been in for the last 5 weeks. Go to a park, make a new friend, pet a dog, lick a stranger, do something that's going to connect you with society. A 2015 study led by Stephen Cole, medical doctor, a professor of medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, provides additional clues as to why loneliness can harm overall health. He and his colleagues examined gene expressions in leukocytes, white blood cells that play key roles in the immune system's response to infection. They found that the leukocytes of lonely participants, both humans and rhesus macaque, what is that even? What is that word? Okay, both humans and something else. They showed an increased expression of gene involvement in inflammation and a decreased expression of genes involvement in antiviral responses. That's crazy. Loneliness could cause headaches. Loneliness could literally just make you more susceptible to a virus. So, let me ask you this. Is social distancing really the answer? That was a dumb question. I'm doing a bit. Please stay 6 feet away from me. Loneliness, it seems, can lead to long-term fight-or-flight stress signaling, which negatively affects the immune system function. Simply put, people who feel lonely have less immunity and more inflammation than people who don't. Now, how do you fight it? How do you combat loneliness? It's pretty simple. While the harmful effects of loneliness are well established in the research literature, finding solutions to curb chronic loneliness have proven more challenging. Apparently, it's not that simple. I shouldn't have spoken before I started reading. Developing effective interventions is not a simple task because there's no single underlying cause of loneliness. This is Holt Lundsted says, different people may be lonely for different reasons, so there is no one-size-fits-all kind of intervention. It's not likely going to work that way because you need something that is going to address the underlying cause. Rochach notes that efforts to minimize loneliness can start at home, with teaching children that aloneness does not mean loneliness. Like I was saying earlier, like being okay with being, you know, enjoying your own company. Now, he also says that schools can help foster environments in which children look for, identify, and intervene when a peer seems lonely or disconnected from others. You know that weird kid that was across the lunchroom from you and never had any friends? Did you ever feel an impulse to go and befriend them just because they were lonely? I did. Now, what did I just mean? Am I saying I was the weird kid across the cafeteria, or was I the one approaching the weird kid from across the cafeteria? I'll be honest, I was both. It just depended on what year we're talking about. Now, in terms of additional ways to address social isolation and feelings of loneliness, research led by Christopher Massey, medical doctor, and a team of researchers at the University of Chicago suggests that interventions that focus inward and address the negative thoughts underlying loneliness in the first place seem to help combat loneliness more than those designed to improve social skills. So it's not about being charming. It's about being okay with yourself. Or at least that's what I'm inferring. The meta-analysis reviewed 20 randomized trials of interventions to decrease loneliness in children, adolescents, and adults and showed that addressing what the research termed maladaptive social cognition through cognitive behavioral therapy worked best because it empowered patients to recognize and deal with their negative thoughts about self-worth and how others perceive them. Oh man, now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of this. This is fun. This is cool. You got to be cool with yourself, otherwise you're always going to feel alone because the number one thought rattling around in your head is, hey, you're a piece of garbage. Why would anyone want to hang out with you? That's the underlying issue right there. Now, some of these research have found that engaging older adults in community and social groups can lead to positive mental health effects and reduce the feelings of loneliness. Just last year, Julene Johnson, PhD from the University of California, San Francisco, she was a researcher on aging, examined how joining a choir might combat feelings of loneliness among older adults. If you've never sang in harmony with 36 other people, you don't know what you're missing out on. Now, half of the study's 12 senior centers were randomly selected for the choir program, which involved weekly 90-minute choir sessions. I'm sorry, an hour and a half? No, let's wrap this up in 45, please. Now, including informal public performances, the other half of the centers did not participate in choir sessions. After 6 months, the researchers found no significant difference between the two groups. on the tests of cognitive function, lower body strength, and overall psychosocial health. You mean music can't save your soul? But they did find a significant improvement in two components of the psychosocial evaluation among choir participants. This group reported feeling less lonely and indicated that they had more interest in life. So maybe it can save your soul. Seniors in the non-choir group saw no change in their loneliness, and their interest in life declined slightly. Ugh. So yeah, go join a barbershop quartet. And it might make you want to stay around a little longer. Researchers at the University of Queensland in Australia have also found that older adults who take part in a social group such as book clubs or church groups have a lower risk of death. Led by the psychologist Nicholas Steffens, PhD, the team tracked the health of 424 people for 6 years after they had retired and found that social group membership had a compounding effect on the quality of life and the risk of death. Compared with those still working, every group membership lost after retirement was associated with around 10% drop in the quality of life for 6 years. Ouch! So first you stop working, and then you don't have that aspect of it, and then you're getting older. Lots of family members and other friends are dying off, and you're slowly getting isolated into that chair on the other side of the cafeteria. Now, to that end, co-housing appears to be growing in popularity among young and old around the world as a way to improve social connections and decrease loneliness, among other benefits like splitting that rent, am I right? Co-housing communities and mixed-age residencies are intentionally built to bring older and younger generations together, either in whole neighborhoods within single-family homes or in larger apartment buildings where they share dining, laundry, and recreational spaces. I tell you what, Gerald's a real bitchin' badgammon player. Neighborhoods gather for parties, games, movies, or other events, and the co-housing piece makes it easy to form clubs, organize child and elder care, and carpool. Child and elder care. Are the babies watching the old people? Who's changing the diapers? Now, Hockley and other psychologists argue that these living situations may also provide an antidote to loneliness, particularly among older adults. Although formal evaluations of their effectiveness in reducing loneliness remain scarce, co-housing communities in the United States now number 165 nationwide, according to the Co-Housing Association, with another 140 in the planning stages. Older adults have become so marginalized and made to feel as though they no longer have any place in society, which is lonely making in and of itself. For society to be healthy, we have to find ways to include all segments of the population, and many of these intergenerational housing programs seem to be doing a lot in terms of dispelling myths about old age and helping older individuals feel like they are important and valued members of society. Huh. That was a big old mouthful, wasn't it? I think that's the longest learning corner that we've ever had. And that's going to do it for us. We're going to wrap up the learning corner right now. Maybe you learned something. Maybe you tuned me out after 20 minutes because that was a lot of statistics and facts and numbers and a lot of people with PhDs talking about words that I don't know how to pronounce, let alone their last names. But, I mean, you know, go back and listen to this a couple of times. There's actually some really solid information in there. Here's the takeaways. Loneliness sucks. And the biggest thing that you can do to combat it is to be part of a community. How do you do that during a quarantine? How do you do that during sheltering in place? Well, you have a phone, dummy. There's Facebook. There's Instagram. Social media has always been like the most annoying part of our society, and yet all of a sudden it just became vital for your mental health. So make an Instagram account. Get your thumbs a-going. Scroll on down. Like this podcast on Instagram. It's at Lauren's Podcast. No, that wasn't a shameless plug. I really think that you should get involved in a community. Whatever you do, just be careful with Reddit, because you might wake up and accidentally have become a Nazi. I'm not sure how that works, because I stay away from them circles. That'll do it. That's going to be it. We're going to wrap it up right now. All right. I'll see you when I see you. Wait. Honey, do you have any thoughts? She's still not microphone ready. Maybe next week. Take care, y'all. Be well. Goodbye. Hey, welcome to the bonus track. You hung in there and you're being rewarded for your patience. Or maybe you just fell asleep and now this is being played throughout your dreams. Just first of all, if you're listening to this podcast to go to sleep, this was a great episode to do it because it was nothing but dry, boring facts for 30 minutes. They weren't boring facts. They were sad. This was the saddest episode I think I've ever done. It was just fraught with clinical analysis of loneliness and depression and why it's an inescapable thing in our lives. I'm so sorry. This isn't what you come here for. You come here to, well, I don't know why you come here. I don't know why anyone would want to come here. This podcast is terrible. But I try to make it funny, I try to make it entertaining, and that, it definitely didn't work. When I was done recording, my girlfriend looked at me and she was like, that was really sad. I'm like, I know, and I'm sorry. And she was like, well, you could just redo it. And I'm like, nah, I'm too lazy for that noise. We're going to let it ride, and I'm just going to record something else after the fact, apologizing to everyone about why am I explaining what I'm doing in such great detail. That's not what I was trying to do anyways. I'm sorry, okay? I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Why did I say anymore? I've never known what I'm doing. I made my cat meow on this episode for no reason other than to exploit his wonderfully cute meow. So yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening. Like us on iTunes.